strap yourselves in because we're about to dive headfirst into a whirlwind of romance, strategy, and mech battles. We'll discuss the unique gameplay that blends tactical RPG combat with visual novel dating sim elements. We'll be gushing over the charming characters, the incredible soundtrack, and the wacky storyline that will have you saying, "So long, boring games."
SegaBits presents Sega Talk, a podcast talking all things Sega, with your hosts, George and Barry.
Look, it's a giant talking egg.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the master here.
So what?
Hello, and welcome to Sega Talk number 137. I'm your host, George, and with me, like always, is Barry.
It's actually Sonic now. My name is Sonic.
Oh, officially?
So, do you guys want to watch a movie or what?
That is a horrible action figure. I mean, if you're listening to audio, Barry right now has a Sonic the Hedgehog, and it looks like...
It's a plush.
It's a plush, but it looks like somebody just, like, took a texture and they just put it on a plush.
All right,
like, it's not... Time. It would have been better if it was just, like, a fuzzy plush or something.
Gotta go fast.
It's, Yeah, it's from the first movie, but then they, like... Like, he doesn't even have the official shoes, but he says a lot of stuff.
Is that all you got?
And he probably has more to say about Sakura Wars than I do, because Sonic, he grew up with it.
So, yeah, we're not going to be talking about Sonic the Hedgehog, right, even though we started.
Go away, Sonic.
Yeah, go away. We're going to be talking about a game called Sakura Wars, So Long, or So Long, My Love. And this is the fifth entry in the game, which is weird. We usually don't talk about just randomly a fifth game in a series because,
right?
I mean, this is a Patreon plug, right?
It is. It is a Patreon pick.
Right.
You know, I don't know if the picker actually left memories, but I'm going to search. Why don't you tell people how you can support us on Patreon, and I will look up.
There's a website called patreon.com/SegaBits where you can support Sega Talk. As he looks for the information, I'll be telling you guys about Sakura Wars So Long, My Love. It's a game that blends romance, robot battles, and historical fantasy. The story takes place in the 1920s steampunk version of New York City. You play as a captain who leads his team of warriors who are secretly also a traveling theater troupe. By day, you charm the ladies and put on dazzling shows. By night, you fight demons with giant robots. This title is also the first time the series officially made its Western English debut. So, any memories?
Well, actually, yes. So, this is a Patreon pick from Bobbert. And Bobbert actually has some memories to share. He said, "I first heard about Sakura Wars So Long, My Love in an issue of Nintendo Power. The game looked interesting, and it's a Sega game, and NIS America localized it. So I decided to give it a try, despite its mixed reviews. First time playing was a bit rough because of too much story, not enough battles. Really love the battles, both land and air. But the game really grew on me when I got more invested in the story midway. My favorite character is the story of Subaru Kujo, and in gameplay is Gemini Sunrise. This is one of my favorite Wii games to play over again, even though the PS2 has better frame rate. I wish this game would have sold better so the series would continue. Here's hoping this game gets a port or remake one day along with the other games in the Sakura Tyson series."
True. It's a weird one. So, what's your history with Sakura Wars, specifically this game, but also the franchise, since there was four more, or past
right.
titles?
Yeah, you know, it was one of those franchises always on my periphery. Like, I was aware of it, but didn't know exactly what it was. You have to remember that back in the mid-90s, when these games were coming out, they really weren't being talked about in America. So the only time you would really see them is if you like went to an import store or a video game convention and you'd see import Saturn games and you'd notice like a lot of these titles and even spin-offs like with puzzle games and stuff. It really wasn't until I'd say the Dreamcast era that I would official Dreamcast magazine would write about Japanese releases, and they would be like, "It's there's no way this is coming west," you know, like they would just be like, "There's a really cool Sakura Taisen 1-4 box set coming out in Japan. Too bad it's not coming here."
Right.
So I always knew about it. I didn't know what this game was all about, and then when I heard that the game was finally coming out, and this was actually one of the earliest SegaBits like news posts I think I did, because I looked and there's like a picture I took of this, which is the PlayStation 2 version,
right,
sitting on my old kitchen table from like my old apartment. So it's like,
that's a thick box.
It's a thick boy.
Yeah.
And it's really nice. I'm sure we'll get into the differences between the Wii and the PS2.
Didn't put those in the notes, but if you want to just briefly talk about it, if you want to, since you have it.
Yeah, I'll do a little unboxing here. So, to my knowledge, PS2.
And I will say that this is in line with all Sakura War games. Like, they all come with like extras all the time, even the Saturn versions. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's super nice. I don't know if the Wii version came with anything. I feel like the Wii one was just like a very basic release. Whereas this came in a box. It's got alternate cover art here, so you can see it's a little more modern. I personally prefer this kind of watercolor pencil ink sort of look to it. And then inside, no manual, but two versions. So it's the English voice version and the Japanese one,
really unique.
Yeah, very unique. And the Wii version does not have that. The Wii version's English only. The box set also comes with this really nice poster. I'm going to try to open it up.
It's like 1,000 feet.
Yeah. Well, it's my favorite piece of the art. It's Gemini Sunrise with her like sword and gun. It's a really cool. And then it also comes with the Little Elp Theater New York 1928 playbook.
Oh, nice.
And it's an art book, so it has, ooh la la, has all the characters with their autographs, as though like you went to go see the show and they autographed your playbook. And then it gives all of their details, pictures of them, stats, blood type, because those Japanese love blood type.
That's true.
And then I really dig towards the back. It has a layout of the theater, like all the seats and everything. And towards the end, it has a whole history of the theater. And so it's a really cool, like, in-universe. It even has the program. So it has all the shows that they perform. It has Cleopatra, Hamlet, Madame Butterfly. And then you'd think I'm done. If you remember, I opened that up and there was no manual. Well, you get like a deluxe manual. So it's like the size of a DVD case. It's not full color, but it's very thick, and it covers all the characters, controls. It's in French, I think, in the other half or something. Is this Spanish or French? I can't tell.
You can't tell between
it's French.
Spanish.
It's French.
And
why?
French. Come on.
I'm flipping through it and I just see la and el and un.
What's next? But, you're gonna be like, is this Chinese or Japanese? I can't tell.
Well, you're French, right?
No, I'm not French. So
it's a really amazing box, and this was at a time when Sega really did not give a crap about Japanese imports.
No, they didn't.
Or special edition boxes. So this was very unique, and it's kind of sad that Sega really took a back seat on this release. Their logo's not on the front. It's not on the back. It's like very tiny in the copyright info. Yeah. So there you go. But it's a beautiful box. I played a decent portion of the game and I loved it.
Oh, really?
But I never kept playing. So that's that.
So personally, I like more of the mech battle stuff in the game. And this game actually is kind of like higher on the romance bits than it is on the mech battle bits, which some people like.
Is that our new website?
Yeah.
Romance bits.
Personally, I think the romance stuff is a little cringe, and I think the game understands it, and it plays it tongue-in-cheek, But to me, it's too cringy to be playing tongue-in-cheek. It's almost like to the point where it's like that anime franchise where you're like, why? You know when you're watching an anime, you're like, I swear this is good. And then they come in and they're always crying. Like they're over-dramatically crying. And you're like, I swear this show is not all about this person crying. There's more to it, but they just walk in on the crying. And I feel like that's sometimes the cringy romance bits in these games, Sakura Wars. Definitely not for me. I don't think they're bad or anything. It's just not what I like in this franchise. That's why I like Valkyria Chronicles better, or even Persona, even though I think Persona's romantic stuff is a little cringe too in itself. But it has a little more interesting bits to it, like online girlfriend idea or whatever. That's like, oh, I want to see how this ends the storyline. This one is more like just classmate girl that you like.
Right.
Yeah. So.
I mean, I totally see where you're coming from. It's not, for me too, like dating sim games aren't really my thing either. But I think it's like top of the line sort of.
Right. If you're going to play dating sim, so it's like, this is
yeah. And there's a lot of really cool features. So it's like, it's not my thing. But I totally get that it's like really good at what it's presenting. The mech battle stuff, it's a lot more, again, what I enjoy. But you got to like work to get to it. I'm trying to think of another. What's that classic Sega game? Shining Force.
Right.
It's like Shining Force meets dating sim.
Visual novel too, mixed in.
And visual novels. So it's a really cool, unique mix. And from what I experienced, it was top notch, but like, yeah, it is not what I'd usually seek out if it was not Sega related. So
for sure. So let's talk about the early start of this game. It actually started off as a bigger plan for the franchise. It was announced in 2002. So Long, My Love was part of an ambitious, thing called the Sakura Wars World Project, aiming to make the, it was supposed to come out on Dreamcast, but then it died. But it was supposed to bring back the Sakura War franchise as a worldwide hit. As you could tell, the fifth game takes place in New York, which is kind of weird because I feel like there's this like disconnect sometimes with Japanese developers where they're like, why don't Americans like our games? I know. It's not in America. If we put our Japanese game in America, all of a sudden Americans will have to buy it. Do you think that's kind of dumb? Because like I feel like it's a niche game already, right? Like a dating sim is not popular at all in America. So you didn't even adapt the game. You just put you made the same exact art style, everything exactly the same, but it's in New York.
Right. Yeah. It's like they felt like they had a good entry point for Western audiences, but they just went as far as setting it in New York. But to be honest, you play the game and it still feels very Japanese, right? And it also does not feel very much like New York. It kind of feels like, you know, you see like video games made in Japan based in France, but they still feel very Japanese because they just can't step away from that. So it feels very European, French, even though it's in New York. And I'm fine with them keeping the art style and everything, but it definitely did not help the game in, you know, transitioning for the Western audiences.
Right. But anyway, so they announced at this event called the Sakura Wars Project 8 new games. The project aimed to release a whopping 8 new Sakura War titles, a significant jump from previous entries. This was done to extend to different genres and try to bring back the falling numbers the franchise had been going towards. I feel like the first game was the height and then it slowly started dwindling with sequels. They also announced more OVAs, and they were all supposed to be designed for Western appeal. That was the number one thing, global appeal, which like we talked about, I think just putting New York or France as part of the setting is not enough. So let's talk about it. Did you know that this started on Dreamcast? Did you know that? And did you know that there was 8 projects announced, including 2 OVAs at this Sakura War World Project event?
I did not know so many things were announced. I knew that it was a part of some project, and I knew it started on the Dreamcast. So that's very ambitious of them.
Right.
But it's a shame it didn't go further.
Have you ever seen a project or a franchise that randomly had an event where they're like, we're going to have two animes and five games or eight games being released? I don't even think Sonic's ever done that.
No, I mean, the most ambitious Sega's done recently is that new energy, new era thing. And it seems like they're moving forward on everything we've seen. So,
right.
Yeah.
So it's interesting for one franchise to have so many. So Sakura Wars 5 is actually Sakura Wars So Long, My Love, and was the biggest title announced. They announced it with the following blurb. In Sakura Wars 4, the story of Sakura Wars protagonist Ichirio Ogami has, for the time being, reached its conclusion. And so we like to announce Sakura Wars 5, So Long, My Love, a new beginning made for the PlayStation 2. Our new setting is New York, the city of the towering skyscrapers. There you will get to experience the feats of the New York Combat Ryu, who were previously mentioned in Sakura Wars the movie, which is another thing with this franchise where they like have movie and OVAs that tie in with the story that tie right. into this. Kind of reminds me the whole thing of an early version of Persona where like it goes like Persona and then you buy Persona 5, then you buy Persona 5 Royale to extend the story, and then you have the anime that extends the story too. They have like extra scenes in the anime, and then they right. have Strikers, which is a sequel to Royale. And so you're like, oh wait, so I have to play like five games to get the whole story. That's what it feels like to be a Sakura Wars fan, I guess. Here's the first game that we announced. They announced that we didn't get in the West. It was called Sakura War. Well, first it was So Called My Love, which we did get, and then it was Sakura Wars 5 Action. In Sakura Wars 5, players will get to meet the New York Combat Review for the very first time. We're also immediately confirming side stories featuring those characters. These stories will explore the characters from a different perspective, and this action game, a genre that's never been seen before in Sakura Wars series, will be packed with excitement. So this game actually did come out in Hong Kong, Taiwan, Korea, and Japan. We didn't get it in America. So I didn't even know this game existed, to be honest with you. I've never heard anyone actually talk about it. But it's a release title. Are you looking it up now?
I'm trying to look it up. Is that what it's called? Does it have a name?
That's what it's... there's a Japanese title to it, but let me see if I can find a... it's called Episode Zero, by the way. Sorry, I didn't put episode. Oh. It's called Action, but Episode Zero. I'll put in some video of it. It looks like a graphic novel here. Oh, I'm playing gameplay of it right now. But yeah, it's a 3D. It looks a lot like the... they're using assets from 5, So Long, My Love, and it looks like it's a side uh-huh. story. So I wouldn't think it's not that long.
But interesting.
So yeah, that's one thing. Did you know this existed?
No, I mean, I knew that there were a lot of games, but I didn't know that there were continuations of 5. What console was it for?
PS2.
Oh, I'm seeing it here. So that just makes me like more annoyed, because it's like I got a slice of the, just a piece of the story here. There's an episode zero. My God.
And this is there's another one too on PS2 called Sakura Wars Story: Mysterious Paris. This is a side story actually taking place slightly before Sakura Wars 4. So they decided to even do a Saw where they go back to so they have a episode zero on Sakura Wars 4, which was on Dreamcast game, and then they have. Sakura Wars 3 is Paris Burning. So this is the port from the Dreamcast onto the PS Windows and PS2. That was part of the project. Also, they did a port of Sakura Wars in Hot Blood on PS2. Uh-huh. So I don't think we really need to talk about the Sakura Wars 1 on PS2. It was just the port of the first game, which is weird because they never did 2. So they did 3 and 1, but not 2.
Huh.
But I do have two pictures of the collector's editions they got. So one of them's a collector's edition, which is kind of like comes with a clock and some CD and a like art thing, it looks like, in a nice big box. And then the other one is just the they call it first print edition, but now I guess we call it a day one edition. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's funny that they did that back then, but now it's kind of normal thing. So that's already 5 titles. So 2 of them were ports, 2 of them were like mini episodes, and right. then Sakura was so long, my love. So we got to 5. And the canceled games include Kouma / Demon. This one was the Imperial Combat Review stars of the Sakura War series. Before them, there was a unit known as the Anti-Kouma Corps, whose battle against Kouma and the Kouma Wars was the spark that led to the creation of Review. And here you... it depicts the war that started the Review, which you play as. And then there's this other one, which I'm going to butcher the name. Sakura Hime Nishiki Imaki is a title of the Sakura Wars Project expansion of Time and Space. The game takes place during the Sengoku period. Please look forward to that story unfold in the setting never before seen in the main series. These two past games, one taking place in more ancient times and the kind of like pre-war to everything that's happened in these games, never happened. And I don't think they're ever going to happen. They've been canceled. We actually, since 2019, we've gotten reboots. So what do you think? Do you think it's a good idea for a franchise like Sakura Wars that's been dropping in sales to saturate their titles, their sales even more by releasing 8 projects and all these, like, sales are down, so to get the numbers back up, they decided to make 8 projects. Do you think that's a little extreme?
Yeah, I think this, they were a little overly enthusiastic. Also, I think the Sega nowadays would just be like, let's focus on one title, make it a worldwide release, have, you know, it come out the same week in every territory. And it's been really working well with Yakuza. And it's just such a shame that they didn't have that mindset back in the mid-90s and in early 2000s. Because I feel like the Sega of today, if they had that mindset and they had these games, these would be a huge success. Sure, they wouldn't be like maybe selling as well as Yakuza, but they would have a very strong fan base in the West of people who like these games and look for these games. You know, you just have to scale the cost appropriately so that, you know, you're not spending millions on games that aren't making the millions. But yeah, it's just a shame that they, I don't know. I want so much more from this franchise, and I wish it would come West. Like I really wish there was like a 1-4 re-release. There are so many games that have gone untranslated. It's just wild.
I will say that recently there's been a big uptick on fans bringing back Sakura War games, as in doing the translations, even the more obscure like Columns games, because there's like a gazillion Sakura Wars games. There's like games on the Game Boy Color that nobody talks about, but yeah, I think
there's a LCD game I saw.
Did somebody translate that one?
No, I don't think you can. But oh, yeah, man. That'd be cool.
That would be cool. But go on.
Oh, that's it. Okay, that's all.
Let's talk about the gameplay of the game, which is pretty important. Sakura Wars: So Long, My Love tells the story of. Let me lower the volume a little bit. Sorry, Shinjiro Taiga, a samurai in training from Tokyo who gets whisked away to the 1920s New York City. There, he joins the ranks of the Imperial Combat Review, also known as the Star Division, This seamlessly ordinary theatrical troop is actually a secret team of warriors piloting giant robots called Kobu? Is that how you say it? How do you say it? Kobu? To defend the city from demonic threats. So let's talk about some of the story elements. It features a double life. Shinjiro must struggle his duties as a budding romance-seeking captain with the intense responsibility of leading the Star Division in combat. Okay, let's get this out of the way. There has to be, like, somebody has to say it. If you're the captain and you're the boss, you can't be hitting on the girls under you. There's a conflict of interest here, right?
And I've learned recently that this kind of falls under a subsection of, like, anime or manga where it's harem anime. Have you heard about that?
No.
It's like a... So it's anything where it's one guy and a bunch of different girls, and he has an interest in all of them. It's like his harem, you know, like the Sultan's harem, which I actually have a pinball machine up over there.
Is there like a girl version of that? I guess there's that one game that, whatever Daddy's game, have you seen it on Steam?
I haven't, okay, but I could see that.
I think it's made by the guys that made Game Grumps, but instead it's like you get a hit on a bunch of dads, and they have to like know their hobbies and all that stuff.
That's really funny.
I think so too, but yeah. But yeah, so this is a genre trope then.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think about the genre trope? You think it's a little weird when you're the boss here?
Or is this I've enjoyed some games in that genre. Like, I enjoy Sakura Wars, but yeah, it is a little weird when you're the captain. Another one that comes to mind is Harvest Moon. But you pick one girl, and then you proceed. It's not like you're constantly going after all of them, because you're never actually going to succeed in finding a wife for your farm.
Right.
But yeah, like, just looking at the girls on the back of the box here, like, I'm seeing all the girls from Harvest Moon, basically. I don't know. One of them's, like, little, though. So I really, really hope you don't hit on her.
Me too. But...
oh, God. She's in, like, the Well, I don't know. No, that's just, like, fighting.
The game also features supernatural threats. A mysterious force known as the Dark Pneumia is manipulating demonic beings to attack New York. The Star Division stands as the only line of defense. And this whole, like, supernatural thing, it actually kind of reminds me of Persona a lot, where in Persona, in the daytime, you go to high school and you're a regular student, but in the nighttime, you fight demons in different scenarios. So they kind of has the same thing going on. I'm pretty sure they got inspired a lot by Sakura Wars, since Sakura Wars predates it.
Yeah.
Historical twist. The main protagonist, is the legendary Oda Nobunaga, a powerful warlord from the Japanese feudal era, who has somehow been resurrected and seeks to conquer the world with his demonic army. Why a demonic army? I wish I had a demonic army. Character bonds, part of the characters, to getting to know the women in your division and getting them, like, manipulating them to liking you, because that's really what the game is about. Because, I mean, you don't want them to hate you. You want to get the points. Weird game. Anyway, choices and consequences. The game features a dating sim element where your choices and conversations and interactions with the female characters can lead to different story paths and romantic endings. What is your least favorite and most favorite part of the game's stories?
I like that it's set in New York. But as I said, I wish they leaned a little. I wish they did some research. It just doesn't feel like New York. But I don't really know what. I don't really like the supernatural elements in the series. I wish it was a little more grounded. Like, oh man, I'm blanking on the name. The Canvas Engine.
Valkyria Chronicles?
Yeah, I wish it was a little more grounded, like Valkyria Chronicles, where the enemy didn't have the supernatural edge to it, but I guess that's kind of a thing with the franchise. So
right.
A little too late to stop now.
I actually kind of like the demonic stuff, but my favorite thing is probably how they all kind of tie in together. Like some of the characters make an appearance, and it does feel like there's crossover. It's not, they consider it a soft reboot, but it's not really a reboot because there is characters from the past, and they do make mentions of the past. I will say the things I don't like about it is obviously the whole dating thing. I mean, I could, like, obviously you want to build relationships with people, but I feel like making it romantic, it's not needed at all. I think the way they handled it in Valkyria Chronicles was better. I think mm-hmm. It's like some of it could be romantic, or it's alluding to being romantic, but it doesn't go all the way. And your main character isn't dating every female character in the game. It's like, so yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the differences between this game and the past. This mm-hmm. game has a new cast and a new setting. So Long My Love features a completely new cast of characters led by Shinjiro Taiga, replacing the Imperial Assault Force from the previous game. The 1920s New York setting is a significant shift from the historical Japan of earlier entries. Do you think that's a more positive thing, time traveling to 1920, or is that a little weird?
That is a little weird. I was actually not aware that you time traveled.
Right.
I thought the series was set in the early 1900s.
And why do you like pick specifically 1920s is the weird part. Like, you could have picked 1980s.
I don't know. And, you know, I have to wonder, are the stars on the U.S. flag accurate in the art for 1920?
You think they care in Japan? I don't know.
I don't think they care. You can keep going, but...
But yeah, there's more emphasis on romance, like I said before. The streamlined combat, the tactical RPG combat system in So Call My Love is considered slightly more streamlined compared to past entries, while still strategic... it might feel a little less complex for veterans of the series. And Western audience appeal, which is the number one thing for the game. I don't know if it actually accomplished that. That's up to you guys. Personally, I think it didn't. I don't think just making a game based in America is enough to make it have a Western appeal. But
right.
I think Americans, especially during this time, like specific type of games like Call of Duty, so I don't think it would have been enough. So let's talk about the long road to the West. So the fifth entry, probably the 17th Sekiro Wars game, and it finally came out to the West. So the first Sekiro right. Wars game in English, and holds a significant place in Sekiro Wars history. It's because it's the first one to come to English territories in 2010. Mm-hmm. It took that long. That's crazy. The calibration effort. The localization was a joint effort between NIS America, or NIS. How do you say that? Would it be?
I call it NIS.
Yeah, NIS America, Red Entertainment, the original developers, and Idea Factory, who have worked with Red. This collaboration likely stemmed from existing relationship because of Red and Idea Factory. 2 years in the making, NIS America invested significant time and resources into the localization. The project took roughly 2 years, making it their biggest and longest localization effort at this point. And like you said, wow. It also featured a dub, which had voice actors from the Skia franchise.
Oh,
the little demon game. Mm-hmm. So challenges and choices. Adapting for a new audience, the localization team faced the challenge of adapting the game's humor, cultural references, themes for a Western audience. Some elements might have been adjusted for better understanding, while others might have been kept intact with additional explanations. What do you think about that when you play a game and it's like a joke and then they explain the whole joke and then you're like, okay, like I get the joke now, but like... It's not funny because it was never going to be funny and it's never going to land the same? Or would you rather them change the joke altogether and make it more Western-ish?
I prefer they change the joke. Mm. Some of my favorite anime is actually like so far off from the original script, like Dragon Ball and Samurai Pizza Cats, which is like a totally different show. Mm. I think they did the same thing with Digimon. Like, it feels a little more real and personable, and I enjoy that.
Chin-chan.
But I... Yeah, but I also enjoy, like, they do that with Studio Ghibli movies too. Like, they don't stick to the script, and it's all the better for that. But I do prefer when it's subtitled to for it to be a straight subtitle with very minor tweaks, because it just, it's weird to me. Like, I even though I just thought French was Spanish, I can look at Spanish and or hear Spanish and kind of understand what's being said. So if you were to have that subtitled and they're saying something completely different, it would throw me off. You know what I mean? Like they just said teddy bear, but the subtitles said something completely different. Like, you know, that's going to throw me off.
Right.
And it also doesn't help if you're trying to learn the language, which I think playing video games or watching anime is a really great way to, like, pick up on Japanese words and phrases. So, that's my take on it.
We talked about the focus on quality. Obviously, it took so long. So, coming to Nintendo, this is a new thing. In the West version was that the series was announced for the Nintendo Wii. Since it took years for the localization to come out, the Wii version was released in 2010, along with the PS2 English version. 8 years after the Sakura Wars World Project announced the games, and 5 years since it was released in Japan. Is that a long time?
I remember that.
Is that a long time?
That's a huge... Because this, I think, was my last new PS2 game I bought. I think it was Sonic Unleashed in 2008.
Mm.
And then the fact that this came out 2 years later and the PS3 was like, man, it was that 6 years or 5 years old at this point, right?
Almost, yeah. I think it came out in 2006, so it was about coming to be 4, 5. It was already the end of the lifespan. So
PS2 was like... And PS4 is kind of like the PS2 of its day now. Like, the fact that the PS5 is out and yet I can buy new Sega games on the PS4,
you could,
and it looks like there's...
You could literally buy the new God of War Ragnarok on the PS4. It's a PS4 game.
Yeah, it's wild. So it's kind of like PS2 and PS4 like are undead. Like, right. They just won't stop.
Yep. And dual voice acting, which we talked about, it offers both Japanese and English audio options. This one, I should have looked it up before I put it, because I let ChatGPT do this note, and I changed a bunch of stuff, but not this one. But according to this, the character that plays Ichiro Ogami is the same voice actor for both the English and the Japanese. Dave Wittenberg. You heard of this guy?
No, I haven't.
But regardless, what do you think about the English voice acting, and did you prefer playing this game in English or Japanese?
Japanese.
Oh, really?
I prefer it in Japanese just because it was like very rare to get this game to come out here. So I wanted to hear what it sounded like and have it be translated in the subtitles. But yeah, I thought the English, from what I've heard, is pretty good. You know, it's not bad.
So
Dave, I guess he does a good job.
Yeah, I guess he does a good job. You know, it's funny because I don't know, it depends on how much I've heard the Japanese stuff. Like, I can't hear Kazuma outside of the Japanese voice. Like, I don't think they should have ever dubbed him in English. But when but when I hear, like, the new Yakuza 7 cast, I played it in English and I thought it was fine. I think everyone did a great job. So I guess it's... I guess it depends. If I'm used to a voice, I like to listen to it on that voice. It's like, for some reason, it took me a long time to get into Dragon Ball Z in English because I watched them subtitled for the longest time when I was a kid. And so I was like, oh, and in Spanish. So it was like the English was the last one I heard. But Lost in Translation, the game's original release in Japan included a series of promotional videos that air on the Sega Channel. Unfortunately, these videos were lost when the Sega Channel service shut down in 2010. However, dedicated fans might be able to find them on video sharing sites like YouTube. Wink, wink, wink. And I don't think I want to play anything because Red is notorious for copyright striking people, from what I've seen for their anime, so let's not.
Okay.
Impact and Legacy. Before we get into that, what do you think about the whole like Sega Channel, and like, should Sega have like some sort of like archival, like, I know they have an archival process, like they have this stuff, right? We've seen it come out with Sega Forever, but we never seen like these like videos that were gone from Sega Channel from Japan. Like, why don't we have like an archive site with all this stuff in HD, like with all the ads and everything?
You know, I really don't know. I wish they would allow even fans to archive it, just release the materials for them. It's not going to hurt anything. It's free advertising.
Right.
And it's materials that were available, and then people just didn't think to download them or right. didn't have the means. So nowadays, you know, it's all these kids are coming out of the woodwork and starting like Twitter accounts, and they're like, this is an archive. And I'm like, is it? Because it's on one of the worst social media sites. Like, you really need to find a place to, like, properly archive this stuff.
Like a real.com or something.
Right, like a real... That's the thing. I mean, little kids listening to this, get a website, get a server, and it's yours. It's kind of like Twitter is, like, the apartment, and websites are the house. Like, you need a house, you know?
I agree. I agree 100% with you on that.
There's so much, because you're talking about stuff that was lost in the 2010s. I'm talking about stuff that is being lost right now, because people are like, you know, Elon's like trigger happy shutting down people for the weirdest reasons.
But it's not only that.
Even our channel, site got like some weird warning the other day.
For what?
It just, I don't know what it was. It was just like, it said our site was like doing bot-like behavior. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
What a moron. But I was going to say, I just don't think these people should give their, what do they say, their following or work over to a single entity like Facebook or Meta, whatever you want to call them, because you never know when they'll turn around and shut down whatever they're doing when it's not profitable, or change the rules where you don't agree with them politically or something deeper meaning to you that you have to leave. And now you put so much effort and time and work into this one platform with 100,000 followers, and now you're going to have to move and start over. That sucks. You should always try to branch out and do something that you control 100% for sure.
Right,
I agree with that.
Right.
So talking about Sakura Wars, though, and war without social media, the localization took a long time. It was praised by a lot of people, but it was not enough for Western gamers to come in and buy the game. And I'm not really that shocked, because during this time, not even Yakuza was popular. Like, people were not into Japanese games. I think this game could have been the best Sakura Wars game with a AAA budget, full anime cutscenes, and it still would have bombed, because it was just mm-hmm. not the time period for it. That's my opinion. What do you think about it? You think it was the time period for it, or you remember the time back then? It was like Uncharted and AAA games that people wanted.
You know, I kind of agree with you, but then I also look to franchises like Dot Hack and stuff, mm-hmm. where I think if you keep, what you need to do is you need to keep at it and let the audience know that it's not going to be a one-off, and to get them invested in the characters. And I think it was just way too late with Sakura Wars. Because it was the fifth entry. What they should have done,
and it was also like in 2010 when like PS2 was obviously like a gazillion years old, and the
right.
Wii was like in the end of its lifespan.
The PS2 was on the way out. It was really targeting like hardcore fans or anime fans, or I wouldn't call them retro video game fans, but like people who still held on to their PS2 mm-hmm. and like were like, oh, there's a hidden gem, you know. But what Sega really should have been doing is during the Dreamcast era, releasing the games to the West, and then when the PS2 hit, started re-releasing the 1 through 4 on the PS2, give Sakura Wars 5 a proper worldwide release, and by that point you'd have 5 titles in the West and probably a dedicated fan base, and just, you know, you got to grind at it. I think you also need to lose a little money to make money, because you need to, like, even if Yakuza 1 didn't do amazingly, Yakuza 2 did a little better, and then 3 did even better, and then 4, and then 5, and then 0, like, was a smash hit. And now here we are at Yakuza 8, and it's like, a million seller. And so I just think they should have given a little more time and patience to Sakura Wars, and also appeal to that like anime audience, those people going to like conventions and buying like graphic novels or manga, you know what I mean? Like target, hardcore target those people to create it, to make it a success. And they just didn't. Sega didn't care about it, and they left it to NIS, who did their hardest, but they're a niche brand, or they're a niche publisher.
For sure.
So,
Rarity. According to price chart, which one do you think costs more? I think you can see it in the notes, so I guess I should. Which one do you think costs more?
I'd imagine the deluxe PS2 one.
True. So, complete, the PS2 costs $89, and the Wii, $68, I would say. Comparable pricing. I would say that seems about right. I think it's one of those games that's going to continue to get rare because I don't think it sold well in the West. And right now, I would say this is kind of in the low end. If you think about it, because I've seen so many Saturn games that probably sold a little more than this game, sadly. Especially considering how popular the PS2 was as a console.
Yeah, this game right now, it's between $90 and $150 depending on the condition. Mm-hmm. And like I follow a few Sega games on eBay that I've been meaning to pick up. One is Outrun. What is
Coast
that?
Coast to Coast.
Yeah. And I know the PS2 one's kind of like not that great.
No.
But I keep kind of dragging my feet on picking that one up, and I've noticed that that's now like going up in price. And I'm like, that's not even the good one.
No.
You know, like that the Xbox one is
the best.
Like, $300.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's becoming like the price of Outrun Coast to Coast Xbox is what Panzer Dragoon Saga was 15 years ago.
There was this post I was looking, because sometimes you'll find like games that have been delisted. There will be like third-party websites where they have Steam links codes, and they'll sell them for a little more inflated price. I was like, I wonder if I could get Outrun Coast to Coast on Steam. No, there's people that are literally offering hundreds of dollars on boards, being asking for the code. So that Outrun Coast to Coast is one of those games that became rare over time for sure, even though it didn't seem like it was going to be rare at the time because it's just this racing game. But it's the racing game, obviously.
Right.
Let's talk about advertisement. As you know, there wasn't too much of a huge push for the game in the West, but in Japan they had two commercials, 15-second commercials. We could check them out. Tell me when you're ready.
Let's peep them.
All right, play.
It's showtime.
Where's Segata?
I know, right?
Oh boy.
So really selling the Japanese New York aspect to the game, which, I mean, did that sell you? Not too much
games. No, I felt like I was watching a movie trailer for like a movie that takes place in New York.
And here's a second commercial with a white PS2 background. Same thing, basically, right? More New York footage. It's not even in-game, though. And it's modern New York?
Huh.
It's like, is that what New York looked like in 1920? Like those buildings?
I can't speak to that. I will say the logo, the Japanese logo, is just ridiculous.
Well,
like the
I've seen Gangs of New York 5 times, and I'll tell you, it did not look like that, because I've seen Gangs of New York. Sorry, go
ahead. It's there's so much going on with that logo. It's like the
which logo
the towards the end of the commercial, like they put the U.S. flag inside the five, and then the Statue of Liberty's behind that, and then the New York skyline's like inside the bar, and then there's like red and blue like gradients inside. It's just too much.
Oh, you don't like the logo?
I will say I did check, and the stars on the cover are accurate.
Oh, really?
It's six by eight grid. Yeah.
Wow.
So good for them.
I'm happy that your American stars got correctly represented on the Japanese art. I guess it is for Americans now. So
it is, yeah.
So NIS also had a promotional ad for the game running on Nintendo Power, and they did something something unique. They did a printable version of the ad for free. You know how we've been talking about how these printable ads, these ads sometimes in magazines are being put on eBay to sell? So here's the high resolution ad for the game that they release on their website for free. Thank you very much. I wish they did that with every ad, because I hate looking for ads and then you get like a really bad scan for a 1995 ad, and then you're like, or you can only find the eBay listings for someone selling the ad. I hate that. So
that's funny.
That's cool. So I just wanted to show that. What do you think about that ad? It's really obviously just the art. Like, the art sells this game, really, right?
It's fine. Yeah.
And what do
I'm,
you?
I'm glad.
What do you think about the artist?
I'm gonna print it out and put it up.
Actually, before we talk, because that's part of the we're gonna talk about next. So, well, we know that Sakura Wars, so Legacy and Sequel. This is towards the end already. Well, we know that Sakura Wars franchise was a big deal in the Saturn era. The franchise has never really gotten back to the success it once had. Sega and Red have seemed to be try everything to not only bring back the franchise in Japan, but make it a success in the West. As you can see, them changing the city to New York and other places around the world didn't help. This was also the last time longtime series artist Kosuke Fujishima contributed to the Sega Saturn game. And since then, he's been doing character designs for the Tales of series. Fujishima is best known for creating the manga series You're Under Arrest and Oh My Goddess. He was replaced by Tite Kubo, who did Bleach. Have you ever seen Bleach?
Yeah.
What do you think about his character designs? He changed the game's art style in the 2019 reboot Sakura Wars. So I actually like his art style. I think Bleach has this really cool thing where they like use regular stylish clothes for the characters. I like when they do that, when like Goku isn't dressed in his gi, but he's dressed in normal clothes. I really love that. He really did that a lot with Bleach, where like they would be wearing like the latest fashion in Japan that week, and he would do it as promotional art. My issue with his art on this is that he's just redoing the art for the old Sakura Wars, but in his style, but without adding his creativity to it. So it's like almost someone, it's like if they had Pixar do a Dragon Ball Z and all they did was they redid Akira Toriyama's art in a like Coco type CGI art. And you're like, oh, cool, but you didn't really do anything else besides redo it in your art style, right? That was my issue with it. It's like, if you're going to reboot it in 2019, why are you making it look like the old game for the Sega Saturn? Shouldn't you just went all out and made it all new? I don't know. What do you think about that? Like, having a new popular artist copy an old popular artist's art?
I feel like if they were going to bring a new artist in, they should have really mixed it up. Because, I mean, it was so long after, and I'm sure we'll do an episode of the 2019 failed reboot. But yeah, it was a weird decision. The game itself, I mean, we'll talk about it someday, but it like it's a different gameplay style, right, which is
it's more
off-putting.
It's more like the art style of what the action game was trying to be. I feel like that's what they try to go for in this other one. But yeah, my whole issue with it is just the like it just reminds me so much of like his other art style, but it's somebody trying to like Sega did not want him to change the art style, but they also didn't want the original artist back. So it's this weird like dynamic where it's like copy his art style, but in your art style, that's more popular.
Right.
So yeah, the game Sakura Wars, the game Sakura Wars, So Long My Love actually got a sequel of sorts titled Sakura Wars New York OVA, which is featured 6 episodes. And some of it retells some of the events from this game, but it's mostly after the events of the game. Oddly enough, even though 2019 Sakura Wars is thought of as a reboot, it actually takes place 1 year after the events of these OVAs. So
interesting.
Long lost my love, and the OVAs, which are a sequel, are set 1 year before the 2019 game. So they're all kind of connected, like I said. So it is a continuation of these games, even though it's a soft reboot. Do you think that's right, kind of too much for new fans that are going to play the 2019?
Yeah, I
maybe they just don't tie in enough, right?
I don't know. I think as much as I like what I've seen of the franchise, I think continuing an ongoing storyline like that is throwing a bit of fan service to a too small of amount of fans that, it, I don't know. Like, they should have just started from scratch, to be honest.
I think it would have been fine starting from scratch. I think it's, which is funny, because I feel like one of the complaints is everything they changed from the game was not received positively. Like you said, it was more action gameplay. And right. I feel like a lot of people complained about that compared to the tactical. So it's this weird, like, when they did change stuff, people hated it. And here we are talking about the stuff they didn't change and hating it. So maybe hardcore fans just wanted the same game. I think it's also not a bad idea to just straight up remake the first four games as one game. Considering
with
an actual budget, I feel like remakes have been doing well for other franchises like Yakuza, obviously the Kiwami games, and Resident Evil, and all these other franchises have done
Phoenix
remakes.
Wright
exactly
has been doing a lot of, and that's what fans really want, is they want like a bundle of games they haven't never been able to play before. So I honestly, yeah, I think if Sega really wants to again work with a smaller publisher who will translate 1 through 4 and give it like a niche release, like, go ahead and do that, because I think that's the future of this franchise, not it becoming a big multi-million selling franchise, because it never will. I don't know what their hopes were for 2019 Sakura Wars, but it definitely did not pay off. And Sonic says,
I am great at resting. I'm faster than anybody.
Oh, okay. He didn't have anything to say.
So, you have anything else to say before we close it up?
Not for Sakura Wars personally, but we do have one memory here on our Patreon. This one is from J.L. Romeo. He says, bought it on release day. The Sakura Wars games were faves of mine from the Saturn days. Played 1 through 3 through GameFAQs translations. Wow, that's hardcore.
That is
so
hardcore.
So to see a proper release with English subs, totally insane. It seems crazy nowadays that some of the best first-party Sega games for two consoles, Saturn and Dreamcast, were never localized. Thank God those days are long gone.
I'm Sonic.
And I agree. I agree. I think it's interesting that we actually got two games for the franchise here. I thought it was going to be one of those franchises that never came back, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
from the Saturn. For the longest time, I didn't even know there was Dreamcast versions of the game. That, so that shows you how out of it I was. But what are we going to be covering next time on Sega Talk?
I think I know what you meant.
So next time on Sega Talk, we're going to jump back to the arcade days of Sega. We're going to be talking about Power Drift, because we got to get through those Super Scalar games. I think we only have a handful left. And I'm even going to jump further out. After that, George, you're going to be talking about Tom Kalinske. And it's
Tom Kalinske, the man, the myth, the legend.
That's right. And that's going to be a Patreon pick from, I believe, Nicholas Schaefer. And it's kind of a new thing. He pitched it to me in the DMs on our Patreon. And he just wants us to start talking about people. So, you know, I guess we'll talk about his early career. But I also thought, George, one of the opportunities we have is that we can dip back into our interview with him for some quotes. And also, we could just email him and ask him if he had anything he wants to, like, say to us.
That's true.
You know, like, type out something for us. And then
well,
after
what he
that,
thought about the Barbie movie, that's a good one.
I'd like to know. Yeah, and then after that, I'm actually going out even further here. So at the end of April, there's going to be another Sega Arcade meetup at the Galloping Ghost Arcade. It's on April 27th, which is a Saturday, meeting up at 1 through 6. Like, that's the time when people all be there, at least. But people can, you know, attend throughout the day. But very exciting news. So Doc Mack, who runs Galloping Ghost Arcade, did a video today where he showed off a new expansion space, which is an old Asian restaurant on the side that they took over. But inside, he was in a room that's going to contain, get this, a Galaxy Force 2 deluxe machine.
Maybe I can't
big
say
spinny
I'm a
thing.
Man.
Jesus.
A Thunderblade machine, which is small, but it's the deluxe one.
Yeah.
And it's going to be in an it's going to be in a dedicated spot, and they've cleaned it up. They're adding all of the little doodads and extras onto it that were missing in the past. But then the big one, the R360, is going to be there. And it's going to be operational, hopefully, by the time we have our meetup. In his video, Doc said that it's going to be, that room's going to be open in the next few weeks. So, having said that, the episode I want to do is an R360 episode, because I will be able to
play it,
ride it, hopefully, make videos. So, I think I got to do that. So, I'm going to hopefully bring like a microphone and record some stuff there. Maybe I'll even record myself inside an R360. I think that would be wild.
Extra hairdo.
But just audio. Imagine that. So it's like, close your eyes and you can hear the motors and stuff. That'd be pretty sweet. So, I want to get arcadey, you know, the next few episodes. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you dig up about Tom and I can contribute to. So,
all this and more on the next Sega Talk. Bye.
Bye.
They told me I could come back to Japan anytime. But I think I'll stay here a while longer. I'm not ready to leave my friends just yet. In love, Shinjiro.